If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, guys and girls. The program you are about to hear will be both fun and educational, but it is not a substitute for medical advice. Although we are doctors, we are not your doctors.
Hello and welcome to Travel Medicine. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internal medicine doc, Dr. J.
Heyo, Dr. Santosh here, pediatric infectious disease doc and a researcher.
Santosh, what if I told you I could tell what state you were from just by your smile?
By my smile? Oh, I thought you were going to go for like accent or, you know, idioms or that kind of a thing. Well, I'm a brown man from the Midwest, so I don't know if this would necessarily work on me, but what's up?
Well, to be fair, this was a much easier endeavor back in the early 1900s, which will tie into our topic today. But there was a point in history where if you smiled at someone, you could tell where they were from. And I don't mean because missing teeth and stereotypes. I'm talking...
I was going to go through the American stereotypes of, you know, the Midwest and the South, you know, as you lose teeth, you can, you know, wander through various states and whatnot, but that would not be very nice.
No, this is going to be a fun science and history episode. I figured we would go back even beyond our pre-med education and into some basic chemistry as we explore the periodic table of medicine.
Ooh, okay. All right. So going back from our biology to our chemistry roots, well, you know, we are all just a massive complex ball of chemical reactions. And yes, we have to understand both organic and inorganic chemistry in order to know how this machine of the human body works. So I love it.
So as we spin our wheel of the elements, wheel of the elements, turn, tell us the medicine we should learn.
We're getting some mixed metaphors here. You went from a table to a wheel to like a magic mirror for a second.
And my pointer is landing on smile. We're going to talk about fluoride. Now, let's get this out of the way early on. There's a lot of conspiracies floating around about fluoride, and there's quite enough positive and negative factual information to more than cover the episode. So everything we are telling you is objectively true. You can take that information and do with it what you will.
Yeah, we're not here to fearmonger or anything like that. For the record, Josh, in terms of the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines on what they recommend for fluoridating our tap water, and likewise, some of the recommendations we'll talk about from the ADA, I am in well alignment with that, according to the data for our kids and for ourselves. But you know, there's room here for some good discussion without getting into the extremes. I agree with you.
Fluoride research had its beginnings in 1901 at the turn of the century, when a young dental school graduate named Frederick McKay left the big city to open a dental practice in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
That is such a leap, especially in 1901. I mean, we're past the Revolutionary War, right? And we have, you know, some form of road systems and whatnot, but we're not quite sure to where we have like cars yet. So that's a long way for a person to travel.
When he arrived, McKay was astounded to find scores upon scores of Colorado Springs natives with grotesque brown stains on their teeth. Ooh. And when I say brown stains, this could be entire teeth were splotched the color of chocolate candy, like the old school M&Ms.
Oh, gotcha. So, you know, when people would make up myths about, you know, oh, George Washington had wooden teeth, and you imagine, you know, teeth the color of, you know, stained oak, that would be what you'd see. Now, not uniformly, just splotchy.
Yeah, just, you know, random tooth here, random tooth here, tooth there, tooth everywhere, a brown tooth. Okay. And McKay searched in vain for information on what was causing this, because there was nothing about it in any of the dental literature of the day. So local residents blamed the problem on things like eating too much pork, consuming inferior milk, drinking calcium-rich water. And McKay kept examining folks, and ultimately he managed to get other local dentists interested in this problem that was known as Colorado brown stain.
Okay, I'm going to choose to not be juvenile and just go ahead and ask you to continue.
It was considered juvenile, as nobody really thought this was a problem or really even real until Dr. McKay managed to convince another dentist, a Dr. G.V. Black, to collaborate with him on solving this mysterious ailment. And Black came basically to spite McKay. He was like, I don't believe that this disorder could exist and go unreported in the dental literature.
This is really good. And this is how good science gets done. So he was of an opposite mind, and he showed up to say that, like, I'm here to see the lie that you're trying to propagate and to shut it down. Like that kind of an attitude.
Well, he came because the Dental Society of Colorado Springs did a study that showed about 90% of the city's locally born children had signs of Colorado brown stain. So first, they demonstrated working together that mottled enamel, which Black said was a much better name than Colorado brown stain.
Yeah.
Have you heard that enough yet?
Yeah, mottling for those who love our American accent,
resulted from developmental imperfections in children's teeth, which means city residents who had their permanent teeth without developing the stains would not risk having their teeth turn brown. So if you were to move to Colorado Springs as an adult and go about your normal life, your teeth would be fine. But if you were born in Colorado Springs and waiting for your secondary set of teeth to erupt, you were at high risk for this tooth modeling.
Got it.
Interestingly, they also found that teeth afflicted by this brown stain were surprisingly and inexplicably resistant to decay.
Oh, okay. So I, for some reason, I thought you were going to teach me about kind of the ills of this particular thing. But okay, so maybe this is actually an advantage. Okay.
Well, I mean, okay, yeah, fine. They won't decay, but your teeth look like somebody terrible, smeared yeah. something on them. So sure, I don't know that we can, you know, get behind and fully turn into cheerleaders for this just yet.
Okay, fair.
However, the best lead they have, or the best lead they had, was that it was maybe something in the water. Because what else did all the children have access to that could be found across class levels, economic levels, societal levels? And this water...
We're presuming they're not, like, chewing tobacco at age 4.
Well, I mean, it's the early 1900s, so I think you can't necessarily make that assumption. But the sheer numbers of people kind of made that as an explanation unlikely. And this water causation theory got a gigantic boost in 1923 when McKay went across the Rocky Mountains to Oakley, Idaho, to meet with parents who had noticed some peculiar stains on their children's teeth.
Oh, okay. All right.
These stains began appearing shortly after Oakley constructed a water pipeline to a spring 5 miles away. So McKay analyzed the water, found nothing, but he told the town leaders, maybe you shouldn't put a pipeline to this spring.
This is really neat. Do you remember long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away when we were talking about Jon Snow and how he would track down the source? In that case, it was the source of disease to a water pump by kind of localizing and clustering the cases of diarrheal illnesses to a single water pump. This is the same type of like epidemiological tracing that, you know, Dr. Black and Dr. McKay are doing. That's awesome.
So now we have a second town, Oakley, Idaho, Colorado Springs. Seems like something is water related, but nobody can find what. Well, next, they traveled to Bauxite, Arkansas, a company town.
Okay. Sorry. Just named after a rock, huh?
Well, it was a mining town. It was a company town owned by the Aluminum Company of America.
Oh, I'll hush my smart mouth. I'm sorry.
To investigate reports of the now more familiar brown stains. And again, you have some comparison studies where this mottled enamel disorder was very prevalent among the children of bauxite, but only 5 miles away, non-existent.
Oh, very interesting. Okay.
McKay and Black published their report along with Dr. Grover Kempf of the United States Public Health Service.
Okay.
And this report reached the desk of Corporate America, Aluminum Company of America, Alcoa, Chief Chemist H.V. Churchill. This is not Winston Churchill. This is a totally different Churchill. Churchill was not having a good day. He had spent the last several years trying to refute and disprove claims that aluminum cookware was poisonous.
So we still wrestle with this. I guess we'll talk about it a little later in the vaccine world because, you know, aluminum is used in an adjuvant. But he was having a similar issue then in terms of...
Well, he was working for the aluminum company and he had been trying to prove that, no, our cookware is not, aluminum is not dangerous. And he was worried that in this aluminum town...
Sure.
The report of problems with the water might provide even more fodder for the people complaining against the company. So he's all right, you know what? I'm going to conduct my own test of the water in bauxite using highly sophisticated tools like photospectrographic analysis. He asked an assistant to take a look at the water samples, and the assistant found that the town's water had high levels of fluoride. So McKay came by... collected the samples, and within months, he had the answer to what had begun as a 30-year quest in the early 1900s. High levels of waterborne fluoride caused the discoloration of tooth enamel.
Okay, very interesting. Okay, so this was We are going to move into the benefits of fluoridation, but this is what happens when the amount of fluoride is too high.
So at this point, no one really understood exactly how it worked, but okay. Fluoride seemed to change the structure of teeth in a way that offered some protection against the 20th century American diet. This is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
Dental caries, or cavities.
Cavities,
At the time, were felt to be one of America's most widespread health problems in the early 20th century. This is because there were very few dentists, almost no dental surveys, so we don't know how pervasive the condition was, but the dentists themselves were convinced it had reached epidemic proportions.
Oh, dear. Okay, all right, fair.
And the reason they felt this was from examining military fitness records. So in 1916, one-third of potential recruits failed their health exam due to cavity-related problems.
Oof, that is a lot.
So imagine a third of the people signing up for the military can't get in because their grills are busted.
That's difficult to imagine. That's a lot of teeth going bad.
Yeah, so finding something that, okay, as you said, maybe discolors the teeth, but offers some additional protection might be useful.
Sure. Okay. Gotcha.
So here's the next name I want you to remember. Head of the Dental Hygiene Unit at the National Institute of Health, Dr. H. Trendsley Dean.
Oh, come on now. That's a wonderful name. I trust this person implicitly. Just right off the bat.
Well, maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't, because Dean set off something that has been fairly controversial even today and probably set the seed of what is some of those conspiracy theories that we're not going to get into.
Okay, all right, gotcha.
So Dean started the very first studies of fluoride in water, began investigating what caused it as early as 1931, and what he wanted to know was how high fluoride levels could be in drinking water before fluorosis occurred. Fluorosis, of course, being that brown stain and mottling.
Got it. Oh, okay. So this is the clinical term for the fluoride being incorporated into the tooth. Got it.
Okay. To such an extent that it hardens the tooth, protecting it from cavities, but also causing that discoloration. This fluorosis is going to be more important as our story goes on. Okay. So he went off on a little Oregon Trail, Colorado Trail, of a whole bunch of epidemiological studies in every town that had fluoride-rich water supplies. And gradually, he was able to zero in on a ratio that offered protection against cavities while causing limited and barely noticeable fluorosis. The magic number was 1 part fluoride per million parts water. So 1 ppm.
Okay. PPM. Okay, so very minute amounts.
So if you have 1 part fluoride to million parts water or less, you get a protective effect against cavities without getting the cosmetic changes that was causing all this concern in these towns. Dean then wondered whether intentionally adding fluoride to drinking water at these physically and cosmetically safe levels would help fight tooth decay, which, as we noted, was a huge problem in the early 1900s. So bad that you couldn't even get into the military.
We're talking about a time when passing, you know, muster to get into the military, the bar was fairly low. I think that's fair to say, right, Josh?
Able bodies. That's it. That's what they wanted. For all that Dean may have set off what ended up being a controversial decision today, he was a very good scientist. And after consulting with colleagues at the University of Michigan, he selected two towns, one to serve as a control and one to serve as an experiment. Those were the town of Grand Rapids and Muskegon, to participate in a 15-year fluoridation trial. Both cities took their water, which had no natural fluoride, from Lake Michigan. So in January of 1945, with the cooperation of city officials, but not necessarily the informed consent of the cities themselves.
Oh, no. Okay. There was going to be like a hitch in the giddy up here. Okay.
Grand Rapids began adding sodium fluoride to its water supply, while Muskegon remained fluoride-free. So the first city in the world to fluoridate its drinking water intentionally was Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Not well known for the cleanest water currently. That region of the world, unfortunately, because of, you know, poor funding and healthcare. I do understand why they picked this area, aside from, you know, the logistically, like where the water was, you know, the natural sources of fluoridated water. Now, I think for a very long time, there's been a record of poverty in that area. So it would be easy to take advantage of these poor folks in terms of running an experiment without consent.
Well, they were adding it to the water for everybody, Santosh, not just the poverty, the wealthy. Like, the government officials were, oh, you can prevent cavities, that'll improve the health of our citizens. Yeah, go ahead, add it to our water, make the other town the control. Let's watch over 15 years and see what happens. So
fair, but like, the public wasn't informed.
Well, maybe if they went to town hall meetings, but it is likely that your average citizen was unaware that this was being carried out. So the Grand Rapids study was originally sponsored by the U.S. Surgeon General, but was then later taken over by the NIDR after the Institute's inception in 1948. It was like the National Institute of Dental Research.
Got it. Okay.
So during this 15 years, they monitored the rate of tooth decay among Grand Rapids' 30,000 school children.
Okay.
At the 11-year point, Dean announced that the cavity rate among Grand Rapids children born after fluoride had been added dropped more than 60%.
Wow.
Now, considering the thousands of participants in this study, this was a huge scientific breakthrough. Remember, this was designed to be a 15-year study. Well, the people at Muskegon over in the control city were getting pretty agitated about this. They're like, how come, you know, why are you taking 15 years? Like, our people have our teeth rotting out of our heads. Nothing, you know, we have terrible dental hygiene. And over there in Grand Rapids, they're getting all that quality fluoride water. And they started campaigning. Basically, they didn't want to wait for the end of the study. They didn't want to see other problems that may arise. They just said, go ahead, add it to us. And despite protests from Dean, with another figure who we'll talk about a little bit later, who really promoted the whole idea of fluoridation of water, from a less than scientific perspective, Muskegon started fluoridating its water before the end of the study.
Oh, okay, okay. And now we're definitely into very, very bad ethical territory here. Okay.
Yeah, so it went from a science project to a political project, and then the science kind of went a little bit downhill. So this study ended up turning into, okay, both towns get their water fluoridated, and then it started spreading out across the U.S. So let's get to something I wasn't aware of before. Where does that fluoride in the water come from, do you suppose?
Oh, you know, I never thought about it. I do know that minerals occurring in water are usually from you know, the groundwater source, meaning that there is local geology that will have, you know, rocks and that have these minerals already inside, and it leaches into the water. But I don't know beyond that, like the specifics of why.
But remember, this city was specifically chosen because it didn't have natural fluoride.
Right, because that was, they could conduct a kind of a controlled experiment without needing to have to add something.
So you know where they were getting all the fluoride that they were adding to the water?
No, tell me.
Toxic waste.
Oh dear.
Specifically, sodium fluoride, which is a waste product of aluminum production. Remember bauxite? Remember poor Churchill trying to prove to people, no, Nothing is toxic about this.
Well, oh no.
the literal toxic byproduct of aluminum production is what was intentionally being placed into the water to fluoridate it. And let's talk briefly about that.
Sure.
Hydrogen fluoride and silicon tetrafluoride gases are byproducts of aluminum and fertilizer production. Before the 1970s, they used to be vented into the atmosphere, gave Central Florida some of the most noxious air pollution in the country.
Got it. Okay.
Breathing fluoride can cause severe lung damage. It's a rapid electron scavenger. Yes. An accidental splash on bare skin leads to burning and excruciating pain.
You know, if you have no familiarity with chemistry, fluoride is in the same chemical family as chlorine, which likewise is an electron scavenger, which is why it's very good as an antiseptic and why it's a fairly good additive to water. To keep it clean. But hydrochloric and hydrofluoric acids are some of the strongest acids. So yeah, I do understand why, people were scared of this.
So in gas form, in liquid form, it is terrible. It is toxic. However, all these gases can be contained in high density cross-linked storage tanks. And in those tanks, fluorosilic acid has been transported from Florida fertilizer factories to water reservoirs throughout the United States. And once there, it is drip fed into drinking water to this day. Now, remember, we've got a couple facts we want to talk about. It is converted. Yes, it's a waste product. It's a toxic waste product, but it is converted into a form that is then liquid and, while still dangerous, introduced into the water supply at that ratio that we learned from the early studies does not cause these problems. So one part per million or less.
Gotcha. Okay, I understand.
You may be surprised to learn that unlike the pharmaceutical grade fluoride in your toothpaste, the fluoride in the water is untreated industrial waste product. However, without the phosphate industry's runoff, fluoridating water would be prohibitively expensive. This is end-stage capitalism at its finest. We have a toxic waste product that we need to get rid of. It's very expensive to dispose of. And on the other side, you have cities that need to fluoridate their water and coming up with pharmaceutical-grade fluorine. Prohibitively expensive. Not going to happen. We'll all go back to having brown, rotting teeth. And yet, when you take this waste product and feed it into the water, poof, decreased cavities.
In, of course, the right amount and controlled condition.
Only a handful of country. I mean, I feel like our listening audience probably has some feelings about this in light of what we've shared.
Sure.
Just.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Let's take a brief check-in, Santosh. How do you feel about water fluoridation now, knowing where it comes from?
So, I'm very happy that I do have a background in, not as formal of a background in pharmacy as a pharmacist, but I definitely know how I get my antibiotics, how we make chemotherapeutics, which are, you know, toxic byproducts of plant toxins, and likewise, you know, where we get some of the aluminum adjuvant for vaccines, which are life-saving. So I'm okay with this as long as there's a genuine understanding of the process, why this is safe, and, you know, why this could be done. I don't have the expertise, though, to be able to say that, like, oh, you know, if you manufacture it in this way and this way and this way, then it'll be all right. Whereas, you know, if we were to use this product, it would explode. Like, I don't have that knowledge. So I feel a little unhappy about how we got to this point. But, you know, you can't really argue with the results over the past 100 or so years in terms of how it helped dental health.
Yeah, so at the time, this was a major problem and a very effective, if industrial, solution to decrease cavities. And because it affects children far more than adults, remember, it was all the kids in these towns who you started seeing it. So you're really protecting children's teeth by adding that. So let's take a quick break. And then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about what our stance on fluoridating water is today, both as a country and perhaps as individuals.
Oh, yeah. So wait, is this one of these where we indulge in some late stage capitalism and ask our audience to listen to these wonderful ads?
You got it. Let's see those smiles as we come back and find out about all the fluoridation in just a moment.
See you soon.
And we're back. Nowadays, only a handful of countries fluoridate their water. In addition to the United States, Australia, Ireland, Singapore, and Brazil. Almost every Western European nation has largely rejected the practice.
Interesting.
And that's largely because they're like, we don't want you to add things to water, because once fluoride is put in the water, they contend it is impossible to control the dose that any individual receives. This is because some people, like manual laborers, athletes, diabetics, or people with kidney disease, drink far more water than others.
If you're considering this as a medical intervention, essentially, you can't control the dose.
In addition, the average person gets fluoride from sources other than the water supply, like fluoridated oral hygiene products such as Crest, first introduced, I think, in 1954, and the very first fluoridated toothpaste on the market. There's also food and beverages that are processed with fluoridated water. You have mechanically deboned meat, like your chicken nuggets. And teas, all of which have fluoride in addition to whatever you may be drinking. So this is a chemical that is already in use throughout things. So Europe is basically like, listen, we have plenty of access to fluoride for cavity purposes. Why are you adding it to the water where people aren't informed whether or not it's part of it? They can't control the dose. And we just don't really understand what other things folks are at risk for.
Fair. So just to make it clear, everyone here in these cases they're working with the same data sets and they're all looking at the same pool of information. It has to do with the interpretation of that data. And this happens, you know, over the swells and movements of progress. Now, I will say that in any given area, region, whatever it is, there are differences in how well people brush their teeth, how often, you know, a child, for instance, will brush their teeth. Do they, you know, actually do twice a day, et cetera, et cetera. So if you have better hygiene habits and things like that in certain areas, then you may be able to get away with this just fine. Whereas this may be advantageous here in the United States.
Interestingly, despite the fact that we add fluoride to our water, Europe doesn't, dental decay in Western Europe has declined at the same rate as in the United States over the last half century.
Interesting. Okay.
So then it becomes a slightly different question. And you remember I told you earlier there was one particular gentleman who was strongly advocating for fluoride even before, say, Dean's study was completed.
Sure. Are we going all the way back to McKay?
Well, not to McKay.
Okay.
So Dean himself, even though he said this is the ratio at which you can add fluoride, he wasn't really suggesting that you add it to the drinking water. But there was a gentleman, John Frisch, a Madison dentist, a prominent member of the Wisconsin State Dental Society, and Frisch took a look at their McKay and Dean's work, and he was convinced. He's like, this science is so good that this is completely safe, it's efficacious, we need to add it to everything and everybody. So sure was he began to add it to his home water supply so he could monitor changes in his children's health. He lobbied to promote fluoridation throughout Wisconsin before the Michigan study was even done.
Okay.
He was the one who started to invoke, you know, because at the time, fluoride was primarily an ingredient in rat poison. And Frisch began to say, no, it's natural. It's imitating nature as closely as it can.
Yeah, okay. And by the way, this is never a good argument for or against, you know, anything, a policy or science. You should never use "it's natural" as one of your arguments. This is one of the great fallacies.
He was the one who began to become alarmed when technical problems with the government fluoride injection equipment, mostly due to adequate supplies, threatened to slow how fast America could induce fluoride into its water. So he's the one who wrote to the Aluminum Company of America and started telling them, hey, listen, we're going to have a lot of demand for fluoride, which happens to be a byproduct. So he was strongly suggesting that we use the offset industrial waste to include fluoride. So Frisch is the one who kind of made a lot of these proposals, and he was the leader of what were the fluoridationists, the people who were lobbying the Public Health Service to endorse water fluoridation.
I understand, you know, you form a coalition or something like that, especially among scientists. And, you know, either you are named and kind of given a designation, or you take it on yourself. But I don't know why, but it's always made me just a bit uncomfortable. I don't like it.
This was something, you know, that was a big problem, or at least a big source of discussion at the time. By the early 21st century, even some of these fluoridationists became concerned that people were being exposed to too much fluoride, a fact reflected in the 2011, that's still within our lifetime, Santosh.
Yep. Yeah.
The EPA recommended that water authorities reduce fluoride levels from one part per million, which had been in place since the 1930s, to 0.7 parts per million. In the 1950s, dentists were claiming that fluoridation of the water reduced cavities by over 60%. As of 2011, they're saying with that same data, fluoridated water reduces cavities by about 25%. And meta studies over the last two decades suggest both of those figures are inflated.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair.
So why is this a problem? As far as we know, if the only side effect is brown teeth, what's the big deal about fluorosis?
This is the issue that we want to get to. If you brown the teeth a little bit because you go slightly higher on your fluoride content, but you're preventing decay, you're preventing cavities, all the other things that go with it. In my world, in pediatric dentistry, we talk about tooth abscesses and other scary stuff like this. So yeah, a little bit of browning. Oh, you get, you know, your whatever, your polishes and veneers later, right? No?
Well, in the teeth, it's one thing, but high systemic fluoride exposures can lead to skeletal fluorosis. Now, remember, teeth are just bones that grow out of your face.
Yeah, covered with enamel. Mm-hmm.
And what the fluoride does is it hardens that enamel. And it hardens the bones. And it hardens them, and it hardens them, and it makes them ultimately more brittle and easier to break. Now, a tooth is fairly compact. Breaking a tooth is hard. But breaking a long bone that is now coated with fluoride and more brittle is much easier, especially in the elderly or children, people who have developing groin plates, or people with osteoporosis. So high systemic fluoride can lead to skeletal fluorosis, which has osteosclerosis, or scarring or narrowing of the bones, ligament calcifications. So the tendons and ligaments that connect your bones and muscles to each other harden and become easier to tear. And you often get osteoporosis because you're sucking calcium out of the bones and replacing it with a little bit of a fluoride shield. This also can lead to malnutrition.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you get a lot of buildup without a lot of recovery. And depending on the blood, it also can promote to a much lesser degree some kinds of tumor, some kinds of cells that are more likely to differentiate into tumors. It does not cause cancer. I want to be very clear, but it can aid in the growth of cells that can ultimately start growing in a cancer-like fashion. That's a very nuanced difference, but it is an important one.
It is important. And you can think about it this way. Getting a chest x-ray if you need it, you know, if there is strong suspicion for pneumonia and we need to confirm that and you get a chest x-ray, that radiation, that ionizing radiation does have the potential to mutate cells, which can then go on to become cancerous. But the dosage is so low that the risk is mitigated by the benefit of, you know, actually undergoing the study. So that's the same kind of thing to think about in the appropriate dose of fluoride, that you're not going, you know, to the point where the dose is so dangerous, but, you know, it is a consideration that you have to keep in mind.
Now, symptoms of a fluoride overdose, because fluoride, remember, can form acid-like compounds. That's why it was used as a rat poison in the beginning. And it is still used in poisons today, although in a much higher ratio than 1 or now 0.7 parts per million. If you have a fluoride overdose, some of those symptoms could be an abnormal taste in the mouth, like a salty or soapy taste, abdominal pain, drooling. And here's the thing. We keep talking about the calcium and to a lesser extent the potassium that it affects. Well, abnormal levels of calcium and potassium in the blood can start affecting your heartbeat. It can cause an irregular heartbeat. It can cause cardiac arrest. It can cause tremors and muscle spasms.
Now, the symptoms that Dr. Josh is describing right now is for acute fluoride poisoning when you have gotten a large, large dose. And so we're talking about in water, something like that. I think, Josh, way beyond parts per million, right? We're talking about, you know, something like, you know, tens of milligrams or something like that.
This is why Dean's study was so important to discover that ratio. What we're debating is whether or not water should be fluoridated, but it is not causing these kinds of acute problems from the water you're drinking, the toothpaste you're using, or even the mouthwash. However, these are some of the arguments that people have put forth as to why it should not be included in water at all. And when I say people, I mean a lot of Western Europe and even some folks within our own government and others.
You know, we are talking very much about experts, not, you know, about, you know, the those who shouldn't be discussing this, I'll put it that way.
So where do we stand today? Well, the American Dental Association recommends that water with added fluoride, bottled or otherwise, while useful for preventing cavities in children, should not be used to mix concentrated formula or foods intended for babies age 1 year and younger to prevent tooth damage. Fluoridated bottled water has special instructions for infant consumption.
Yeah. And here in the United States, Josh, I believe that the vast majority of bottled waters. So tap water is fluoridated, you know, it by most of our cities, you know, local public health centers will assist with like a local water and power to fluoridate the water. But bottled water, which we consume way too much of in our society, it's that one is not fluoridated. Unless it's like loud labels on the front that says fluoridated.
And before you go running out and drinking nothing but bottled water, keep in mind, then you're just consuming microplastics. So there is no good response to any of these. It's just,
yeah,
this unfortunately. This is for historical, academic purposes. It's educational, it's informational, but it's not going to change how you live your life. So since the topical benefits of fluoride are as good as the systemic, but risks increase with ingestion, the current recommendation from most medical societies separate from dentists and or the current recommendation from most medical societies, including dentists, is to limit fluorides to dentifrices, such as toothpaste and mouthwashes, where you're exposing it exclusively to the teeth. For a short period of time, it is not being ingested, it is not being swallowed, and it is providing that small part per million benefit to increase the strength of your enamel without discoloring your teeth.
Yeah. So here we are talking about dosage and frequency, which is well within, you know, even when we're talking about Europe or here or any place else, this is in the dental chair, right, Josh?
Yes.
Right. So this is, you know, they tell you to rinse and spit and the, you know, the very, very minty stuff that you have, or they give you, it's almost like a mouth guard, right? Like the gel that sits in the, they call it a tray, and they go, and then the dentist tries to talk to you, even though like, what am I supposed to say back, doc? Like what do you expect me to say? Like that.
Yeah. So the American Medical Association urges state health departments, because it's not a federal decision at this point that requires fluoridation in all the water. That is still done by each state's government. And it urges state health departments to consider the value of requiring the fluoridation to initiate actions when appropriate. And they proposed fluoridation standards per the Environmental Protection Agency. So as of now, our water is only 0.7 parts per million, and it really may not even be providing that much of a benefit. So if it's not providing a huge benefit, as we've seen similar decay in Europe without any fluoridation, it has a risk of harm from the amount of water varying from person to person, increasing some risk of osteoporosis or osteosclerosis, or in longer term, possible effects on kidney. It's probably time to start writing to a congressman saying, you know, I can get all my necessary fluoride from my toothpaste and my mouthwash. It does not need to be added to the water. However, if we do that, where is the phosphorus industry going to offload all its waste? No.
Not our problem, Josh. So I will make a note here that it is really important to study these questions over and over. There's no such thing as settled science, for the most part, especially in biology. When we're talking about medicine, interventions that we put into place have to do with the incidence of certain diseases in the community as a whole based on various factors. And Josh, it's the most like the highest possibility here is that in the 1900s and even coming all the way through the 1920s and 30s, when, you know, Black and all those other folks and Dean were running their studies, there wasn't a lot of brushing going on. And you didn't have, you know, the fluoride toothpastes and whatever like that to help add, you know, a small daily dose of fluoride to your teeth. Now that toothbrushing and the availability of fluoridated toothbrushes and mouthwashes is much higher, which is fantastic. Now the benefit from adding it to the water kind of goes away. So, you know, it may happen again that someone says, oh, I don't want fluoride in my toothpaste anymore. And all of a sudden, like the United States just lose all of its fluoridated toothpaste. Or we get like a goop, like a Gwyneth Paltrow, who says, don't put the fluoride in the toothpaste. And then we need to add it back to the water.
Oh, God. So, nobody tell Gwyneth Paltrow about fluoride. God only knows where she'll recommend you start shoving it.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, no. I wasn't even thinking about that. Josh, I love and am concerned about your imagination, but your ability to step into her mind and predict those trends and save us all is very valuable. So keep it up.
So, but I love your comment about settled science. At the time that these studies began, this was a serious problem. And this was if not an ideal, at least a practical and achievable solution. As our technology and society has advanced, as we have done more studies, those original problems have been adequately addressed. And this is no longer an issue that we perhaps need to be handling the same way. So that's it for this week and this particular foray into our periodic table of medicine. Join us next time when we discuss helium and whether it is better used in children's balloons or MRI machines and our secret government stockpile.
Ooh, I know where my vote is. I'm sorry, man. I'm so sorry, young man, but you know, so-and-so needs to make sure they don't have cancer in their stomach, so.
But think of our national balloon animal industry.
I'm imagining the little French child, like the little ta-da, ta-da, and then he just lets go of the balloon and it floats away. little tear.
So keep an eye out for future installments of Periodic Table of Medicine. That's it for this week. As always, we love to hear your comments, questions, and feedback. If you'd like to support us spiritually, emotionally, or financially, links to do that are in the show notes, along with links for further reading. We are on social media, including Facebook, X, TikTok, anywhere that you can have a presence. We are probably around, attempting to educate, inform, and amuse.
Yeah, hit us up. We are on a couple of the obscure ones, Mastodon, and what was the other one, Josh?
Oh, yeah, I haven't checked my Mastodon account in a while. And Blue Sky.
Blue Sky was the one where we got our invitation to join. Yeah, absolutely.
So this show is produced by me with a lot of help from Dr. Santosh and friends. Our theme music is composed by Rachel Leisure. Until next time, as always, keep a song in your heart, soap on your hands, a shot in your arm, a spin on your globe. Make sure that you check what's in your water, or at least brush your teeth. And when you've done all of those things, pick a place to travel, a study to achieve, and happy travels.
Bye, everybody.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.